Unlock big savings and add style and security to your home with high-quality Schlage door locks from Menards. Whether you're looking for a traditional interior lock or a Wi-Fi-compatible electronic lock, Menards has you covered. With more than 200 options of Schlage door locks in stock, save big on all door locks. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Dylan Gemelli podcast. I have a very, very special guest today. She is very, very well known in the biohacking community. She hosts the Longevity with Natalie Nittam podcast, and she does a little bit of everything. I can't wait to talk about so many different things. We're going to talk about peptides. We're going to talk about all kinds of things that intrigue me, but I'm going to let her expound her knowledge base to everybody too, because she's definitely into some things that I'm not as well versed on. So my friends, this is Natalie Nittam. Welcome, Natalie.
Hey, Dylan. Nice to see you again. And thank you for having me. This is going to be fun.
Yes.
It's not our first conversation. This is going to be...
I know it. I love it. I can't wait. I know I only have you for a certain amount of time. And so I want to just get as much out of you as I can today. So tell me first, what inspired you or drove you to do what you do? Like, what was your guiding light to kind of find your way into this whole realm of biohacking and health and wellness? I want to hear your story.
Well, thank you for that. So my story is, I mean, I've always, since I was young, been kind of like, I was like a science kid, right? I was always really kind of geeky into science. And I studied physiology in university, and I was a fitness instructor. And at some point I kind of got sidetracked and ended up on the corporate world, but I never let go of the whole science piece, right? Like, I remember when university was over, saying to someone, I miss it. Like, I miss learning. I miss that being deep into that human physiology thing. And that was an extremely articulate way of putting that, wasn't it? Anyway, so by keeping a hand in fitness my whole career, it always kept my toe in the water. And about 15 years ago, I just felt like it was time for a career change, and it was time for me to go back to that thing that I never stopped missing. And so I went back to school and I became a holistic nutritionist. And then I think that this was really early days of like Dave Asprey and the Bulletproof Diet and Rob Wolf with the Paleo Diet, Mark Sisson with Primal, you know, like that whole, that all those guys were coming up, and I kind of was really interested in that. And within a couple of years of graduating from nutrition school, Dave announced his first cohort of the Bulletproof Coach Training Program at the time. And on a whim, I just signed up. Wow. I was like, I need to know more about this stuff. And that was really kind of like the gate that pushed me out into this space. And after that, it's, you know what it's like you're learning and learning, and it's one thing to the next, to the next. And then I came across peptides a few years ago, and I was like, wow, this is wild. And I almost turned my back on it because my husband was like, dude, you keep going in different directions. Like, you need to pick one thing and commit to it. And I was like, yeah, but this one's really cool. He's like, no, you've got, like, you know, you've got, what did he say? He's like, you've got shiny object syndrome. You need to, like, focus on one thing. And he's right. But I have since reframed my shiny object syndrome as I'm a perpetual learner.
Yes.
Like, right. And this peptide space has been like just the most incredible journey. And what happened very shortly after I came across peptides is I started a community on Facebook, pretty much devoted to peptides in a way, just for me to learn more, but also to connect with other people in the space. And then about a year and a half after that, I launched the podcast, and the podcast is what, like, the Facebook community kind of, it started to tap into this love of learning and teaching that I have.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I kind of have that dual thing going on. And then the podcast is the, is now, I feel it's like the full expression of me allowing me to learn and inform and guide at the same time. So that's how I, why I do what I do.
Is the Facebook group still going?
It is. I mean, I don't think Meta's recently closed down two very similar communities to mine. I feel like our days are numbered. Like, we have almost 30,000 people in there, but I don't know. The group, if anybody's interested, is called Optimize. It's Biohacking Superhuman Performance, which used to be the name of the podcast way back. Bit of a mouthful. So it's still there, but it's, you know, we're skating on thin ice because a lot of what we talk about is so controversial. And to be fair, the community, it takes on a life of its own when it gets that big. And it's very hard to manage, you know, people giving out medical advice who shouldn't be doing so. People sure. asking for medical advice who, you know, like, I understand that people are desperate for answers and looking for solutions to problems that have not, they haven't been able to solve through conventional means. But in a world, it's a little bit like Reddit, right? So in a world like that, you get all kinds of people, and you get, on the one hand, you get professionals that have big hearts and want to contribute, but you also get a bunch of yahoos who think they know who are giving out information that they have no business doing. So
Welcome to my world.
And everything in between, right? So with respect to all the people in that community and the ones trying to help, but I think you have to be very, very cautious in these communities about who you take advice from and what you ask for, because it's a very slippery slope. I think in a perfect world, in a community like that, if we could really control the flow of information, is to try and give people information that gives them the next step in their quest, but doesn't give them the answer that we're not qualified to give.
Right.
Right. Those are the guys, and it's not kowtowing to Meta. It's just being responsible.
Well, and is it any community that you start? Because I come from my original area that I started online was from bodybuilding forums, right?
Yeah, they're infamous for this. Oh, my God.
That's why you saw me just like smiling and shaking my head at you, because it's like, I know better than anybody what this is like and what you have to deal with on a daily basis. And so you can't, when you got numbers like you have, even on those forums, when there's only 100 people chiming in, you can't control it. You really can't. I mean, you can't just block everybody out because it's never going to end. Well, so you can only do your best and try to give the best knowledge you can and be respectful when somebody is out of line or says something stupid like, hey, that's just not right, you know?
And you know, the problem is people can be really unkind and mean. You don't know who you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. We've had to remove people from the community who've gotten very angry. So what's ended up happening is I've withdrawn myself a lot from that community. I have a membership community on another platform. I mean, people do have to pay to be in there, but I'm personally present a lot more in there. And I think that, you know, that it's a tough thing, guys, because I know that there's people who don't necessarily have the means to pay. But I mean, I've kept it really reasonable as I can. But as soon as people are paying for a community, it tends to filter out a lot of the people that are more difficult to deal with.
I'm big on you get what you pay for. And, you know, if you go to a free community, there are smart people in there. There's very intelligent people in there, but you're also going to get what you said. So I was actually going there. Have you considered doing a paid community? But I guess you beat me to it. So that's,
it took me a while. I didn't start until couple of years ago.
I would say that's the best route to go you can do what you want to do, because look, and I want to get into this with you with peptides. So when we're talking about something like this, there's a lot of different types of information that goes out, because you got people that are bodybuilders, you got physicians, you got people that really just are web MDs that they earned from Googling, you know, and so you don't know how to sift around it. So how did you further your education and have the confidence that you were getting the proper information? And where, what is one of some of your maybe people or your go-to sources for that type of information?
Yeah. So, I mean, so I did a course, like kind of an introductory course with a company at the time. I don't know if they're still out there in this same way, called Apeiron. So it's Dr. Dan Stickler's community. And that was my, like, that was kind of my first formal sort of grounding. I interviewed a lot of people. Like, you know, at the end of the day, you got to talk to people who are way smarter than you.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And you, I learned a lot from the community. I learned a lot from the doctors and the people in the peptide space who became my mentors.
Mm-hmm.
I did the, like, there's the A4, you know, I bought the A4M certificate, first level certification.
Yeah. Course.
Like, you know, you consume, the challenge is there wasn't at the time a lot of information, formal education out there. And so, you know, to that degree now, I don't practice,
mm-hmm.
right? I educate people and I educate people to a point. But when it comes to personal use for people who have problems, like issues, medical issues, I do not consult with those people anymore. I direct them to physicians who can help them or professionals who can help them. But I'm very clear about my lane, right? And I see myself as a person who shines a light on different directions that people can go. And sometimes I will go knock on a door for them and help connect them to the person they need to connect to. But that my role is not, you know, it's funny, people call me a peptide expert and it makes me very uncomfortable.
Really?
Right? Because as much as I know about peptides, there's a lot more out there. And I know enough that I feel like I can really give people a good foundation from which to go forth to, right? But if we're, like I said, if we're talking about people, like, you know, people in the Lyme community, the Lyme, the mold community, these MCAS, like people who've got really intractable issues that the conventional system just is stymied by. When those people are looking for help with peptides, what's really important for them to understand is that there's a very defined order of operations when you're dealing with issues like that. And they don't all involve peptides.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Sometimes you have to stabilize your system before you can bring the peptides on board. Sometimes the peptide can be helpful. But if you bring a peptide in too soon, sometimes it'll make you worse or it won't do anything. So, and you're wasting your money and your resources. And frankly, you're wasting time when you could be getting better.
That's right.
Kind of peddling on the spot. So I think that I think in the peptide space, those of us who are in it have to be mindful, to be really responsible and to guide people in the best possible way and take our egos and stick them to the side and really look at the person in front of us and say, what's going to serve this person? What's going to help them?
I agree. I had this discussion with you a little bit when we talked before about, you know, when I started, it was 2011, and I got introduced to research chemical companies, and I was supposed to be marketing for them. And I said, okay, I'll do it. You know, at the time, well, sure, why not? But I need to learn and understand. And there was about 7 or 8 that you could choose from to buy back then, and that's it. It was your basic GHRPs, ipamorelin, GHRP26, sermorelin, melanotan 2. There was not a lot to choose from, and it was only looked at and focused on how are we going to get bigger off of these? How are we going to gain muscle? Oh, they're not as strong as steroids, so they're not worth shit. That type of deal. So I had to overcome that because I was a big SARMs guy, was my thing, and peptides was secondary. Mm-hmm. And I never, I'll be perfectly honest, I never gave peptides like the due respect that they have today because I was so caught up in, this is where I was a fool and I learned, so caught up into this, oh, they're not building muscle, they're just weak. And there was the slight annoyance of a lot of those having to pin them multiple times or, you know, not eat food around ipamorelin and CJC1295 or HGH fragment. That was the other one. You can't eat around those and it's just a hindrance. And
and you're a bodybuilder and you're trying to get 10,000 calories in a day. And you're like, dude, what do you mean?
Yes. And we're not exactly fasting back at the, at those times. It's, you know, it's just not a thing. And it's hard to fast when you're working out 3 and 4 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time I used peptides and I'm carrying, you know, my, and mind you, they're little insulin syringes, but you're carrying them around. I'm going in the fucking bathroom wherever I'm at and doing it. And you know, and it's not a big deal, but it's annoying. So what I'm getting at is I've watched this evolution to under 10 to now thousands. And I guess for me, it's mind blowing. And I've taken it so much more serious as I've met people like you and I've met doctors and people that I didn't even know existed because I've lived in this, you know, other community.
Mm-hmm.
So for you, what do you feel is the, in terms of, and I think I kind of know where you're going to go with this, but the validity of them, because the, you know, it's considered an alternative medicine and it's almost, a lot of them aren't approved. They're research chemicals or they're shady gray areas. I mean, we know that they're, well, here, let's do this. You just tell me real quick in basic terms, what is a peptide? Why is it safe? Or why are they considered safe? And why do you find them to be a good alternative to regular medicines, we'll just call them medicines that are prescribed.
Mm-hmm. So what a peptide is a small protein.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that. There are 50 amino acids or shorter.
Right.
Right. And an amino acid, as I'm sure your community knows because of their background, are the building blocks of protein.
Mm-hmm.
And we know the proteins are signaling, very powerful signaling molecules in the body. That's what they do. They're folded up into little origami shapes. Sometimes they have to unfold a little bit. Sometimes that origami shape presents something like a lock and key, like you have a receptor. The origami shape is the perfect fit for that receptor, and that's how the peptides work. So that's what they are. And what is so fascinating about them is because all the peptides that we're talking about really are fragments of proteins that are naturally occurring in the body. And this is where it gets interesting. This is why a lot of people say nothing could possibly go wrong with a peptide. Peptides are natural. Your body knows peptides. Your body knows what to do with them, which is true and not true, right? Because when we take a fragment of a peptide, we now reintroduce it into the body in a concentrated way in order to elicit a certain response, you're circumventing some of the body's natural pathways. Now, the cool thing is you're not knocking out any of the natural feedback loops that may be in existence, which is why in the bodybuilding world, people are like, well, this is bullshit because I'm not going to get the jump in testosterone or HGH or whatever it is
right.
that I can get by bringing an exogenous growth hormone or testosterone. True that, but it's also not going to shut down your own body's endogenous production of growth
Thank
hormone.
You.
So there's a natural piece to it that I agree gives them a profile that can be safer,
mm-hmm.
but there's also a point where we're kind of like, it's almost like you're bumping to the front of the line and you're flipping a switch. And, you know, there's checks and balances in the body that you're getting past. So for example, you've got the melanotan peptides, which are very well known in the bodybuilding world.
Mm-hmm.
What's cool about melanotan peptides is that they are, they're number one, they can give you a tan with very little to no sun exposure. That's a big one.
Yep.
Number two, they actually also have some metabolic effects,
mm-hmm.
right? They suppress appetite, meaning if you use too much, you're going to get super nauseous, which is not necessarily what we want for building. But if we're a couple of weeks out from competition, and we're in a process of cutting, that could be a really handy tool, right? But, you know, they also have antimicrobial properties. They also have anti-inflammatory properties. All really cool. But there might be a little possibility that nobody's really fully elucidated yet, that there could be a problem in someone who's had a history of melanoma of overstimulating those melanocytes, those cells in the body that produce pigment.
Mm-hmm.
And so there have been not very many, but there have been probably a couple of cases where people who had a history of melanoma had a reoccurrence after using a melanotan peptide.
Really?
Now, did it cause the cancer to come back, or did it just drive the resurfacing faster? Nobody knows the answer to that question, but that gives us pause.
Right.
That means we can't run around saying, oh, you could just use this. It's fine. Right? It's safe.
Yeah.
Then you've got another one like BPC-157, which is Body Protective Compound 157, which is the workhorse of the peptide world because it is great for healing the gut. It is really great for promoting healing of soft and hard tissues. So tendons, ligaments, muscle, bone, all of these things regenerate and heal faster when you're using BPC-157, which is why if you're an athlete, using BPC-157 can help you recover faster in between workouts so that you can train harder more often. It's also really good for wound healing. It has properties for healing burns or eyes. It's got neuroprotective properties. It supposedly helps to balance the serotonergic, dopaminergic, and GABAergic centers in the brain. So it helps to balance neurotransmitters. Now, here's the really interesting kicker that not too many people like to talk about. There's a small set of the population that instead of helping them to be more balanced in their neurotransmitters, it actually messes them up.
Really?
It makes them anxious or angry and gives them anhedonia, which means they don't feel pleasure anymore. So we don't know why, and we don't know who those people are. So it means that you don't get to run around saying BPC-157 can be used by anybody anytime because there's no side effects, right? So we need to, you know, it's the thing with peptides is they're so, it's so tempting to make them sexy. It's so tempting to run around and say people, oh, and it's true that, I mean, I've seen incredible healing with peptides, but we need to keep the nuance in the conversation and try to stay away from those sexy sound bites because, especially because they're available through research labs still. So pretty much anybody can, or for people go on Alibaba and get like a vial for $5, which is downright scary because you don't really know what's in there. We have a responsibility to help people to be more balanced in their approach.
I have a question about BPC-157. So I have a very good friend and he is in like the, he works for a company that he actually develops Vascepa, which is a PCSK9 inhibitor. If anybody doesn't know, for cholesterol and Lp(a) and things like that. So he was telling me that from what they've found with BPC-157, and I'm curious to your thoughts on this, this is a possible side effect. He said that BPC works through angiogenesis and it creates new new blood vessel pathways to promote healing. But he said that you can run into serious problems if you inadvertently open up a blood flow pathway to the wrong spot and accidentally wake up a sleeping giant, which could be a tumor. Is that something that you've seen or come across, or do you think that that is just...
I think that's a theory that people have because as soon as you say angiogenesis, right, which is exactly what Dylan said, angiogenesis, the development of new blood vessels to bring supply to an area that of injury, let's say, which is why BPC is so great for ligaments and tendons that we know don't have enough blood flow to begin with. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm saying that to date, there is literally not a single piece of literature you will find in animal studies that would point to that.
I haven't
seen it anyway. I mean, it might be out there. I'm not Google Scholar, so I haven't. I can't say that I've read every paper that's ever been published. But to this time, there's a possibility that in the body's wisdom, that is not a thing. Now, if you had an active cancer, probably it wouldn't be smart to go there.
Right.
Right. Because if the body, I don't know this, again, like I'm not a doctor, right? I don't know this. I don't know if the body considers a tumor as an injury.
Mm-hmm.
If the body considered the tumor as an injury, then there would be a chance. But the truth of the matter is, cancer tumors are pretty damn good at driving angiogenesis all by their little lonesomes.
Right.
That's their hallmark of cancer, right? It's one of the hallmarks of cancer is its ability to secrete chemicals that give it better blood flow. Mm-hmm. So, but having said that, if you know you have cancer, I don't think it's a chance I would take.
No.
Right?
I agree.
And I mean, unless I was working with an oncologist and a doctor who have prior experience and understand the mechanisms of action, but I wouldn't recommend it. And if you have a history of cancer, you probably have to be more careful. Now, the flip side of BPC-157 is one of the other things that it seems to do very well is it protects organs. So it's really good for the liver. It's really good for the pancreas. It's great for the heart. There's some studies that show that it can help with managing blood pressure. It won't do it on its own. So if you've got high blood pressure right now, you can't just go run out and get some BPC and think your blood pressure is going to come down. But it's BPC-157 also, there's some really interesting literature on how it can help to heal kidneys with people with chronic kidney disease. It's going to be a piece of the puzzle. You're still going to have to fix your diet. You're going to have to make sure that whatever's offending the kidneys is managed, that your electrolytes are on board, that you're doing all the pieces, but it may well be part of the solution that helps to really turn the corner on those kidneys, which conventional medicine doesn't have.
100%. Okay, cool. So, and I think that's what it was kind of boiling down to, is it would exacerbate maybe an existing tumor or something that was there that you didn't know of. But that I think that's more theory than anything, like you said. So I don't know. I've never seen anything about that myself either. I've never seen one person report it. I've never seen any of it. But I guess in theory, it makes sense. So I guess it's more of an assumption than anything.
Yeah, and we don't want to discount. Yeah, we don't want to discount a statement like that from someone who's in that world of researching and working with an organ, right?
Right.
So we just don't want to do that. But at the same time, you know, sometimes people get, he's sitting there in all of the knowledge that he holds. He's like, well, here's the thing, you know, here's how we know cancer tumors work. And this thing does this. It's not a stretch.
No,
it's not really a stretch. It's a logical, as a matter of fact, it's a logical question to lay out as a hypothesis and to just do a bunch of research on.
I agree. It got me thinking plenty. That's why I'm asking for sure and bringing it up, because I want to know experts' thoughts on it. So I always work closely online to study what the research chemical companies are finding that their top sellers are. And BPC has taken over as the top seller for peptides for the past 2 or 3 years now. It's not even close. And I've talked to, I would say, 4 or 5 of the top selling companies, and they all tell me the same thing. But I wanted to ask you this, because what's really quickly become one of the top 2 or 3 is there's this big craze on NAD right now, which I'm sure
NAD. I would think that the top ones right now are any of the fat loss peptides. They're blowing everything out of the water.
I'm excluding those out of the conversation. So I'm taking GLP-1s out, because we're going to have a different discussion on that.
Okay.
those are on a different level, and everybody wants those. So I'm excluding those right now. So I would say NAD is one of the most popular ones currently that's kind of taken off in the past year, 6 months to a year. And I've had very differing opinions on NAD from some of the people that I hold in extremely high regard, like Dr. Urith, who I just I hold her in extreme high regard. She just does not like it.
She's awesome.
Yeah, she's the best. She is.
Well, because you know why? Because NAD exists with NADH. Like this is a little bit that what we were talking about before, right? I will do NAD IVs a couple times a year, right? I use NAD support, right? So these are supplements that support my body's production of NAD, but doesn't actually push NAD into the body.
Okay.
I use that on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what she's saying is all these people running around buying NAD and injecting it sub-Q day in, day out, week after week, month after month, you're messing with a system that needs balance.
That's what she said.
And if you're going to throw something like that out of balance, you don't know what the consequences are. The other truth is that the NAD molecule itself is way too big to get into the cell. So there's still a lot of fuzziness in professional circles about what exactly are these NADIVs doing. They're doing something, but there's a real belief that probably those NAD molecules are acting as signaling molecules on the outside of the cell. But nevertheless, we're stuffing extra food down the goose's throat, you know? And I don't know, and I'm with her, I've resisted using NAD outside of my NAD supplement support and doing this one or two occasion a year. Like I kind of bring people to on a medical retreat with me. And I did 5 days of NADIVs in the spring, and I just went back recently and only did 3 days this time. And I won't do an NADIV again until next May when I go back. Right? Unless I somehow become an alcoholic or a drug addict between now and then. And apparently NADIVs are really great to help people with addiction. But, you know, that's not unlikely to happen. Yeah.
Well, I don't really ask a lot of people's opinions when I run something or anything. And I went to her because I had a stack laid out that I had on hand ready to start. So it was MOTC.
Yeah.
GHKCU copper peptide.
Yeah.
And ipamorelin and epitalon and NAD. And she's like, "Oh, you're not going to like my answer." And I said, I said, "Don't forget who you're talking to here." I said, you tell me what I need to hear, not what I want to hear. So she starts laughing and she's just got on the thing about NAD. So I was curious your thoughts. She made so much sense to me, which she always does. And so I told her, "Fuck it. I'm X it out, you know, I'll get rid of it."
Dr. Earth is brilliant. She's one of my favorites. I've had her on my podcast, I think,
the best,
3 or 4 times, and I will continue to bring her back.
Yeah,
because she's just awesome.
I hold people, and you know, I throw around intelligent very lightly because that's I don't like to throw around compliments too much. I've got her like on the top tier level of who I respect and who I will actually go to. I mean, so yeah, we're definitely on the same page with her. So I want to get over to the GLP-1s, but I did want your thought on one other peptide. Well, two, actually. With BPC-157, like we were talking about, generally speaking, a lot of people stack it with TB-500. How do you feel about that? I know that's what I do, and I find it very, very effective.
Yeah, they're smoked salmon and cream cheese. They're peanut butter and jam. They're like all the things, you know? They go together like nobody's business. Mm-hmm. I mean, they complement each other.
Yep.
Right? And what's interesting, I mean, TB-500 is a fragment of thymosin beta-4, which is the full peptide. And I like thymosin beta-4 personally because it just has more, there's more to it.
Yeah.
It has 7 different docking points, so it's going to hit a lot of different marks. And as a matter of fact, what we're seeing as a trend right now in the oral peptide world is there, and even in the injectables, they're isolating some of those docks. So there are 3 to 4 amino acid peptides, which starts to bring them a little closer to that other topic we may touch on, which are bioregulators.
Right.
But those 3 to 4 amino acid peptides can be taken orally, and they're much more specific.
Right.
Right. In what they do. But if you have kind of like a bigger issue and you don't really necessarily know, bringing on that whole 43 amino acid behemoth, which is thymosin beta 4, and partnering it with BPC-157, you just get a really nice dual action in terms of healing and even healing nerves, right? So even nerves get some benefit from either or both together. And I'm sure you're going to bring up next, you know, the third leg to that stool, which is the growth hormone secretagogues.
That's where we were going. Yeah.
It's a natural, right? It's what
together.
People call the Wolverine stack, right? And it can be extremely powerful. Like, I've seen it be very powerful. But again, folks, like, just so you know, BPC-157, I think, is still on the no-fly list, according to the FDA. Thymosin beta-4 is on the no-fly list. CJC-1295 and ipamorelin is back on the list of, okay, we'll let compounding pharmacies and physicians prescribe these.
Mm-hmm.
And what those do, and I'm sure they already know this from you because this is your world, is they stimulate your body's own production of growth hormone. And why that's so magic is, number one, growth hormone in and of itself is healing, right? But on top of that, with BPC-157, you have a peptide that is upregulating the expression of growth hormone receptors, which means if you have an injury and there's more receptors or there's a greater expression of growth hormone receptors at that site of injury, and you have more growth hormones circulating in the system, it's going to help to increase the speed of healing at the injury site.
Right, right. 100%. And that's another thing. So we're talking about combos. And so you said Ipamorelin and CJC1295, those are the other two that are like peanut butter and jelly that everybody runs together at the same time. There are, you can run them separate, just like you can TB500 and BPC157, but you're getting the best of what you could do stacking them together. I was going to tell you, I use a BPC TB500 gel. Now that's research chemical site, but I love it so much as opposed, because I get sick of injecting. I'm on TRT and I've injected so many years. I don't use steroids anymore, but obviously I have, and the injection gets old. So this cream is incredible. Like it really, really is. And it's simple.
It's interesting because it would have to have some pretty interesting technology to get, because those peptides are too big technically to get across the skin. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've come across a product recently that actually can and does. This is where it's going, right? Like these people are cracking the code on how do we get molecules. And I mean, we've always had DMSO. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that you're familiar with DMSO.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't mind rocking around smelling like sulfur.
Yeah.
And the challenge with DMSO, though, it's a little too strong. So it can be very irritating. God forbid you have a bacteria on the surface of your skin, it's going in along with it.
Right.
So there are more nuanced, better products out there now. Like I have one I talk about, you've got your gel. But I think we need to be apply critical thinking.
Right.
But
oh,
it is
100%.
Pretty neat when you have one of those, like I can't use thymosin beta-4 or CJC or Ipamorelin. Right. So
really?
Let's go back to this conversation about, all the peptides are great for all the people. Well, it turns out that one of the fragments of thymosin beta-4 is one that destabilizes mast cells.
Really?
And although I don't think of myself as someone who has histamine mast cell issues, apparently I have enough that for me, thymosin beta-4 pisses off my immune system big time.
Really?
And then CJC Ipamorelin, which is the other it is one of the it's one class of peptides that I've seen more people, again, have histamine immune responses to. My body's just like, yeah, it's a big, big fat no there.
You know, I had that with Melanotan too. Every time I've ran it, I've either been able uncontrollably, and I'm talking small doses, throwing up every time I inject it and being very, very, very like succumbing to illness, like colds and coughs. And I stopped running. Yeah.
Four times. I mean, here's the thing, guys, listen to your body. Mm-hmm. It's like the BPC-157 thing I talked about earlier. Then some people, it drives anxiety and anhedonia and anger. Like in the event that you're that person that's going to decide to self-experiment, which I'm not saying you should, and especially if you have complex issues, I really would advise against it without guidance. If you're going to wear this mantle of the biohacker, N-of-1 experimenter, right? If you're going to assume that personality and take that on as a responsibility, then you need to be really aware of how you feel and what the impact is of these things on your physiology from the first day that you bring them on board. Because with the BPC, what I've seen is people who either were unaware or decided, I'm just going to push through, and they end up in a really bad way for months.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you guys, there's other ways to heal the body. It doesn't have to be a peptide. I mean, peptides are great, but there's lots of other modalities out there. You've got red light, you've got lasers, you've got so many different things available to you.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be a peptide. So it's not worth it. If there's a question in your mind about, let's say, I don't know, maybe colon cancer runs like crazy in your family and you haven't had a colonoscopy in a really long time. Like, I don't know. Like, you've be smart and understand that these are very, very powerful molecules. Like, think about it. Oxytocin, for example, which is something that is used to drive labor in pregnant women.
Right.
It's also a connection hormone in the body. Well, there was, who was it? I think it was, oh my God, what's his name? Carl. You know him. You know him. Anyway.
You're on a blank.
Anyway, he was interviewing a peptide doc quite a while ago, or a number of years ago, who talked about how oxytocin also has anabolic benefits. And so next thing you know, everybody's rushing out to buy oxytocin and use it post-workout for its anabolic benefits. Well, the thing about oxytocin is when you're using it, you're using 0.75, like you're using as little as half a micro, like 0.5 micrograms or 0.75 micrograms, maybe 100 micrograms, because think about how powerful a compound is that you can introduce into your belly fat, and 1 to 2 minutes later, you get a crazy head rush.
Right, right.
You didn't even put it into your blood. You put it into belly fat.
I know.
And it's like a milli, itty bitty little teeny tiny drop. And it elicits that kind of physiological response. Like, this is where we just have to sit and wait and go, these are, they're amazing. I think that over time, they will revolutionize the way doctors practice medicine. It's going to take time, but they are incredibly powerful. So with power comes great responsibility.
That's right.
So we need to treat them with respect. And so, you know, sometimes when I'm having conversations like this, I feel like I'm the wet blanket because everybody's walking around saying, oh my God, these things are amazing. They're fantastic. And legit, right? Oral BPC-157, if you have gut issues, it can really help to move the needle for people.
That's right. It can.
And sometimes it can even help with musculoskeletal issues taken orally if you don't have a major biomechanical driver to your injury. But I guess I've taken on this role because I feel like nobody else is out there saying this. And so I don't think wet blanket is a really good moniker, but I...
We need people like you, though, that will be honest about it, that everything is not rainbows and unicorns. There are side effects. There are problems. And you have to always listen to your body first, because you and I both know. I can tell you that you should get this benefit at this dose and whatever the case may be. And it's the same thing that I have done with like people using steroids. I don't know how estrogen prone you are, for example. I don't know if your body's just going to hate this at a certain dose. I don't know if your body is going to metabolize this as well as somebody else does. I have no idea. All I can do is give you a guideline, but it's up to you to do your blood work and to listen to your body, period.
Yeah. And do your blood work.
Yes.
And when you're done doing that, do blood work again. Like with SARMs, you got to be smart.
Oh, I do blood work every 3 months. Now, people are like, I can't do it. You can. If your health is a priority, you certainly can. You can do it at least twice a year. But every time you use a cycle of anything, I tell everybody, and I want your thoughts on this, pre, mid, and post. Pre, so I have a baseline. Mid, so I know how you're responding. And post, to see how you recover. That's the minimum. Yeah. Because if you don't do all of those three, you don't know how something's affecting you. And you don't know if you had a problem to start with.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, it depends on what you're doing. But anything that's touching your hormones, 100%.
Yeah, that's what right? I'm, that's 100%. Where I'm getting at. Yeah.
And I mean, the cool thing is now you've got some great services.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if you've heard of Cyfox. Like, these guys, they send you a kit in the mail. You pay your finger. You put some drops on a card. You send it off. And it's super affordable.
Yeah.
Like,
it's so easy.
The world of labs is evolving so fast. The technology has moved forward. Like, it's leapt ahead by light years. And even if you have old blood work, you can load it onto their platform. Like, it's almost like whereas it used to be really hard because you had to somehow hypnotize your physician to get them to ask for blood work they didn't think you needed. And then, you know, you have to get yourself to the lab and you have to do the big blood draw and then you have to wait and the whole thing. These guys now, it's like, it's a subscription and it's less money than almost anything else. And you can just get insight into how your body is responding to different protocols.
That's right.
Pretty powerful.
It's amazing. So I want to go to the GLP-1 route, but I want to ask you about one. This is how we're going to transition there. I'm going to go with a fat-burning peptide first that I have found personally to be very, very effective, and people are really flocking to it. And then I want to transition that to GLP-1. So what is your thoughts on tesamorelin? I have seen that. I found it right when it kind of was coming out, because I'm always looking at fat loss things to, because people are always looking for that. And so it's always high on my list. But I've watched that go from being something that was just looked at for fat loss to, oh, we can lose fat on this. We can maintain muscle. We can get stronger. We can do this, this, this. And it's tolerated really well. How do you feel about it? I haven't run into a lot of people having problems with it other than the cost of it. So what is your feeling on that?
So Tessa Morellin is the same family mm-hmm. as the other growth hormone secretagox.
Yep.
It differs by maybe just a couple of amino acids, right? It was developed, and it is a drug, mm-hmm. right? So it's available, but it was developed for specifically for men who are on HIV meds that was causing them to develop visceral fat.
Right.
And
right.
so Tessa Morellin was developed for that population and turned into a drug. But if you look at it, all you're doing is using that growth hormone secretagog at a way higher dose than you would be using CJC.
Got right? it.
So CJC, typically people are using it anywhere from, let's say, 100 to 300 micrograms a day. Hops, right? Tessa Morellin, if you read the literature, is 1 to 2 milligrams a day.
Yep.
Right?
I'm generally at 2.
Yeah. And so now what I would say to you is I cannot touch Tessa Morellin mm-hmm. because of my body's issue with growth hormone secretagogue. It works really well for belly fat, but it's a bit, and because it's a growth hormone secretagogue, it's going to crank up your growth hormone. It's going to be easier for you to build muscle. It's going to be easier for you to recover from your workouts. It's also got some obviously it's got lipolytic, right? It's going to yeah. burn fat specifically around the middle. Like it can be fantastic, but it's pricey mm-hmm. and it's a one pathway monkey. And one pathway in the sense that it ups growth hormone and then growth hormone does all the things.
Got right? it.
When we're going to talk about the GLP-1s, what's fascinating about those guys is they are not a one pathway monkey. They're hitting the body in 4 or 5 different ways to get people to the point where their body is releasing weight.
Sure.
Right. So, and I've seen the growth hormone secretagogues, typically I find men respond much faster and better from a fat loss perspective. I've seen lots and lots of people, certainly with the CJC of Morellin, they don't get the fat loss benefits. And mm-hmm. maybe that's because they've got they have other stuff going on, whatever the case may be. They can also drive water retention.
Got it.
Right? Because excess growth hormone, you know this from the bodybuilding world, mm-hmm. you take too much growth hormone, you're going to get puffy, which is the nightmare of the bodybuilder, because there goes that definition in the veins and the whole thing. So where my striations go, geez, wait, they were there 5 days ago, I swear. Here's a picture.
Right.
So it's great, but I would say Tessa Morellin has fallen out of favor ever since for fat loss, specifically fat loss, ever since the GLP-1s have hit the stage.
Of like course.
They've just kind of gone, move over, baby. We've arrived.
I think with bodybuilders, they still tend to lean towards it because they do find they can hold on to muscle. But general public, certainly they're not going to go for that now. They're going for the GLP-1s, which is where I want to shift to with you now. Here, let's just keep it very basic and broad before we get into any science on it. What's your opinion on them?
I think that used properly, they're fantastic.
Okay, me too.
That's my short answer.
Me too. What do you think are the common problems with them? I'll tell you what I think, and then I'm curious as to your thoughts. I think that people misuse them, misdose them, overdo them. I think that the microdosing is the way to go. All of the best people that I have talked to that I find to be the most intelligent stand behind the microdosing aspect. They find benefits at normal dosing, but I think in my view, just from what I've observed from people, is that they often misuse them and they go too far and don't really understand what they're even doing with them, I think, to a point, and understanding like the amount of muscle that you can lose and the negative effects and what they actually do. Can you tell us what they actually do to help you lose weight?
Yeah. So, I mean, I just want to say something on the microdosing thing. I think microdosing it depends on the person, mm-hmm. right? And it depends what you mean by microdosing.
Right.
Right. So there's people who are taking 1/5 of the starting dose and having really good results.
Mm-hmm.
For someone who has a broken metabolism, who's been yo-yo dieting their entire life and walking around with 100 extra pounds, there's a really good chance that that little tiny itty-bitty microdose isn't even going to hit the mark.
Right.
It's not going to start anything. So it depends who you are, why you're using it, and what you're using it for, which is the same thing as why you're using it. Sorry, I'm repeating myself. So to answer your question, what they do, remember we said they do what they do in many different ways. So the first thing I'll start from the top and work my way down.
Please.
Number one, they hit the food reward center of the brain.
Okay.
So they make you just not as interested in eating food as you used to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they're being researched for addiction, because they have that same impact. It's that whole addiction center in your brain. They seem to kind of shut it down.
Okay.
Or turn it down. So one of the things that you'll hear people say when they're using GLP-1s, the food noise is gone.
Right.
I'm no longer eating something and thinking about what's the next thing I'm going to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, which to some of these people is like, it's almost like they've been living in a world where they had headphones on blasting music in their ears 24/7, and all of a sudden, it's gone quiet. Like, it is remarkable how transformational this truly is for some people. It's not everybody, but for some people, right?
Sure.
The next thing they do is they slightly raise your resting metabolic rate. And this is why people see their heart rate go up. And they also see their HRV tank, especially at the beginning. The body often over time adapts, but at the very beginning, if you're wearing an Aura or Ultra Human ring, whatever ring you're wearing, or a Whoop or whatever device you're using, you're going to notice that your HRV, your heart rate variability, goes in the toilet. And that's because your resting heart rate's gone up. Like, that whole ratio, that balance between the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system is kind of off. It's getting thrown off by the thing. But the reason for that is it's raising your resting metabolic rate. And so your burn rate is higher at rest. You're basically burning through more calories at rest.
Okay.
Number three is that it slows down gastric emptying. So what does that mean? It means that your stomach's not going to be able to move food through the system as fast. What does that mean in practical terms? You stay fuller longer.
Right.
So you have less appetite to begin with. You're not like the pipe's not draining the food as you're eating. So now you're like kind of building up food. So you're going to feel fuller faster, and you're going to stay feeling full longer. The dark side of that, there's two. In some people, it can cause really bad heartburn, like really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes for those people, it's enough that they can't use them. Or what they need in some cases, if number one, they eat smaller meals, and I suspect that some of those people are eating through, they're not hungered through habit.
Right.
They're overriding the peptide a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Or if that's not the case, sometimes using digestive enzymes with those guys, it helps the body, because most of us don't make enough digestive enzymes to begin with. So the food sits there and it just kind of ferments. It doesn't get broken down properly. So if we add digestive enzymes to the mix, then the food is at least getting broken down. And when it's time for it to move through, it's better digested. It's ready for its next phase. Right?
Okay.
The other dark side of the slower motility, and this is a bigger issue with, you know, I don't want to get you in trouble, so I'm not going to say the brand name.
You can say whenever.
And the bigger issue is semaglutide, which is Ozempic, the first one that came out, versus tirzepatide, which is Mounjaro, the second one that came out. Sorry, did I say semaglutide was the second? It's the first that came out, right? And it's the first of the big ones. I mean, GLP-1 agonists have been around for a long time, right? There's liraglutide. There's all these other ones beforehand, but never have they hit the mark the way these guys have. Especially more so with Ozempic, is constipation can be a massive issue.
Really?
And constipation is such a rampant issue in society that it makes a bad problem and make it worse.
Right.
You have to be extremely vigilant about that. You got to get your fiber in, you got to get your hydration in, you got to get your healthy fats in, and you got to watch it.
And that's what I would...
Yeah. If it's a problem, if all of a sudden you're pooping once a week or less...
It's a problem.
it's a problem, right? And it can make you really, really sick. So I'm just going to sit here in this section and talk about some of the black box warnings and issues. The next one is, in not a lot of people, but in some people, it can cause pancreatitis.
Really?
And pancreatitis is a big, bad, nasty, horrible, painful, can lead to pancreatic cancer down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Nasty. So you got to talk to your physician about your health history and what, I mean, I've seen, and I'll tell you, like, I've seen it happen to a couple of people in my membership community, and it was not in the Facebook community, and it's, be, and it's, you know, like, when you see it happen, you're like, okay, this is a thing. This is a thing. This person didn't do anything wrong. It just, now, did this person already have a pancreas that was compromised? Are they heavy drinkers? Do, like, I don't know all the answers to those questions, but this is why you got to sit with your physician who's probably seen this over and over and over again and can at least start to ask the questions to make sure, right?
Right.
There, before BPC-157 got taken off the table by the FDA, there are a number of physicians that would give people BPC-157 with the GLP-1 as a protective mechanism for the pancreas. Okay. Now, the other black box warning is for a particular type of thyroid cancer that they've only really observed happening in rats. But, you know, I'm, as time goes on, I'm hearing a bit more chatter about the risk of it in humans. So anybody who has a history of thyroid cancer probably is not a candidate. There's the chatter I've heard. I haven't seen the studies yet, but the chatter I've heard is possibly that it would be linked to long-term high dose use, right? So we just have to be, again, we have to be mindful. I think the thing that we have to be really cautious about with the GLP-1s is that we take our time, we go low and slow,
yes.
We use our minimum effective dose and be patient. It took you a long time to get to where you are. It's not going to resolve in 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
That's number, okay. So now let's move down. What else is the GLP-1 doing? This is where it gets exciting, right? It actually improves the pancreas's response to glucose in the system. So that, and it makes you more insulin sensitive. One of the problems that got us to where we are in the first place is we become insulin resistant. So the body doesn't respond to insulin properly. And then the pancreas sometimes doesn't release enough of insulin. So if it helps the pancreas to release insulin in a more appropriate manner when needed, plus it makes it easier for your body to respond to insulin, which means it gets glucose into the cell, mm-hmm. which means you're going to store it as glycogen. And guess where it really, really works? Oh, at skeletal muscle.
Got it.
And cardiac muscle. And this whole storyline about how the GLP-1s eat your muscle is the biggest bunch of crap I've ever heard, because it will cause your body to consume muscle in the event that you don't eat enough protein
mm-hmm.
and you don't exercise.
Right.
Are you going to lose? Am I saying you'll lose no muscle? Hell no. You might. You might lose a little bit of muscle, but if you lose 40 pounds of fat and a little bit of muscle with it, guess what? You're way ahead.
Yeah.
Like, you're way ahead. You're metabolically healthier. You can build back the muscle.
Right.
Right? The big problem is people who overuse them at too high a dose, don't prioritize protein, and do not exercise. They figure out that, you know what? I can sit home. I can't eat as many donuts as I used to, but I can still eat donuts. I don't actually have to go do that sweaty, nasty thing I got to do. And I'm still going to fit into my size 6 jeans. How amazing is that? Okay, it's amazing, except you're not that much healthier metabolically.
Right.
And now you really can't come off them.
Right.
Because 100%. Now you've lost your most important organ for managing your weight loss and your metabolism is your muscle.
Right.
And if you've lost the muscle, guess what? The minute you come off these things and go back to eating a normal diet, you're cooked.
Yeah. You can't, there's no possible way that any person with a functioning brain can think you're going to lose 40 and 50 pounds and not lose a little bit of muscle. It's just not humanly possible.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
And maybe you don't need as much muscle to carry less of you around.
No, but you have to tear down to rebuild in the first place. You have to, this is just what you said is perfect. this is a marathon. It's not a sprint. It goes in stages. And if you're going to do this the right way, you have to go through the X process first to go back to Y to Z. And you can't circumvent that. I don't care what you're taking. You can't. It's just like with steroids. You take Tren. Just like you said, you can get away with eating like shit or doing whatever, but it's not going to benefit you in the end. It's just not. It's a little cheat code that's actually going to set you back further. And so I'm glad you brought that up. When I brought up the microdosing, that was more for people that are just trying to use it every single day that really don't even need it. You know, like the people.
I wouldn't go there personally. That's not. But I know that docs like Dr. Yours will have her patients using very small doses as an anti-aging because there's some anti-inflammatory stuff and keeping the insulin. I think it just depends on the person.
Yeah, I agree.
Think if you're doing the work and you're in the gym and you're dialing in the diet and the whole thing, I mean, again, I'm not a doctor.
Right. It just depends.
She probably knows stuff I don't. Yeah. I'm less inclined that way, but that's just my personal opinion. No, that's not my medical opinion.
You're like me. You're the keep it real person, and that's all I want. So let me ask you this, because I know you're running out of time, but I'm curious. So let's do just a quick comparison of the difference or what makes, like, why they came out in phases. So let's, with semaglutide, tirzepatide, and now retruatide, what's differentiating these, and why is it like, okay, so tirzepatide's looked as, okay, this is stronger, why? And then retruatide that's coming out, why is this supposed to be so much stronger? Yeah. What's the differentiating factors there?
Yeah, I haven't really done my homework on the retruatide, so I'm not as well versed on it, but I can tell you that tirzepatide is a dual incretin, so it hits two different pathways. Semaglutide hits one.
Okay.
Semaglutide is just GLP-1 agonist.
Right.
Whereas tirzepatide is GLP-1 and GIP.
Got
agonist.
It.
So it's two different pathways. So, and what would happen with semaglutide is after a while, for a lot of people, they hit a wall and they can't go any, like their body's just like, it's almost like the body's figured it out and said, no, okay, we're done with this.
Right.
Your body, like, don't forget that there's a set point in the hypothalamus. The body, don't forget that it is an evolutionary advantage to be able to keep a buffet on board in case there's a famine. And all that yo-yo dieting that you've done through the years has taught your body that there's times of famine coming. And so it better hang on to this extra stuff for that next time you're going to decide to starve it.
Right.
And so the benefit in my mind of the low and slow fat loss, like the first time, and, you know, postmenopausal women are the perfect candidates for this stuff because we wake up one morning and we look down and we go, who the hell is this? Like, what just happened? And now I think it's getting better because we're more informed as to the fact that we become insulin resistant as we go through menopause.
Right, like, right.
Everything changes. That diet that you used to eat that you got away with, gone.
Not so
much. All those stupid memes about women going through menopause, chugging a bottle of wine is, by the way, ladies, killing you. Just here to tell you, find another way to deal with your stress. But postmenopausal women, so, you know, you pack on, it's like this, the magic 10, only the magic 10 you don't want.
Right.
So there's 10 pounds that show up. And the problem is that every year you tend to add one or two extra pounds to that.
Right,
and now you add to the fact that you're stressed out because your kids or whatever, and then your parents need you more, and you've got a career on the go, and you've got all this stress. So now the cortisol builds, and like this kind of perfect storm happens. So the GLP-1s for women, postmenopausal women, are incredibly powerful, but we have to be able to do all the things we just talked about. We have to be eating a protein-forward diet. We have to be hydrating, getting the fiber in, getting to the gym, like doing all that stuff. But the first time I used a GLP-1, it took me, it wasn't even a year though. I mean, it was pretty good, but I had also dialed in my nutrition and dialed in all the things. But it took at least 9 months for me to drop about 12 pounds that I really didn't need.
Wow.
And then by keeping it off for the next, I'm going to say, I mean, keeping it off for quite a long time after that, you allow, like, the hypothalamus resets your set point over time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. But you've got to be able to stick with it. And then, you know, for me, every once in a while, if I feel the wheels coming off the bus and things start to creep on me, that's when I'll microdose.
Got
right?
it.
It's also a reminder, oh, guess what? You got lazy. Guess what? You thought you could just have a croissant every time you go by the store. You thought you could have pizza
right.
every time you want it. I can have pizza, but it's a slippery slope. As you start to let that stuff back into your life, you go from once a month to once a week to once twice a week to, oh, well, what the hell? And then you end up in a situation where you're really stressed out and the wrong people quit on your team and you're barely keeping the wheels on the bus and you wake up 2 weeks later and you're like, uh-oh. How the hell did we get back here again, right? And so we have this really interesting tool that we can kind of go back to, help us to get back on track, dial it in again, still do all the right things, and get back on track. So it depends, right? Like, I mean, genetically, I'm predisposed to being insulin resistant. Every single person on my mother's side of the family had developed type 2 diabetes later on in life. It's a thing.
Well, you have to play the cards you're dealt and you got to understand them and work your way around
be
it,
smart.
Basically. Yeah. 100%. I could keep you all day because I feel like we just got started, really, to be honest with you. So I hope that we can do another one of these because this is...
I would love to.
We can
talk about retatrutide next time. I'm cautious with retatrutide. I know it works really well for some people.
Yeah.
I get a little bit worried sometimes because, number one, it's not through its phase 3 clinical trials.
Right.
And I see people stacking, like making a fruit salad out of all the different
GLP-1s. Yeah, it's insane.
I'm just reserving judgment. I'm more conservative than a lot of people.
Me too.
I get it. And you don't have to listen to me. But I'm just not going to jump up and down on that bandwagon just yet until I have more information.
I'm a boots to the ground guy, and I'm in a way it's good where I come from and my background because I get to see people try shit, you know, because I'm not willing to do that. So I get that. But at the same time, like you said, it's still phase 3. I need to see way more on it to make judgment one way or another. I just know the strength of it or what it's supposed to be. But other than that, it's research chemical sites, once again, that are really mass producing it and selling it right now.
So. They're jumping the gun. Now, people could be sitting there laughing their asses off going, what a bunch of hypocrites. So you're using BPC-157 that's not cleared.
Right.
But now you're telling me retatrutide, oh, it's not through its phase 3 clinical trials. I'm like, you got to pick your battles. I think we have two other products that work really, really well. I feel for the most part, and I'm sure there's exceptions to this, but for the most part, if you're doing the work, one of those two is going to work for you.
I agree. And people have been using BPC for well over a decade that I can trace back to that I know for sure. I ran TB500 when it first came out. It was like 2014 at the research site.
It's been around for a long time.
Yeah. And I was blown away the first time I used it. I used that before BPC-157.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, all right, we're on to something here. Now, I was using MK2866 for healing with it, but TB blows that away. That's a totally different animal.
Well, and it's a thymus peptide. It has immune benefits at the same time. Like, we haven't even touched on the immune peptides. Like, we haven't even touched on the bioregulators. Like, I mean, there's so many other ways to go here.
And
it's just, I think the GLP-1s, in a perfect world, everybody would have enough understanding and knowledge of themselves to know when they really need to go there and then use them properly.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that whole thing of Ozempic face, that was a big deal. Anytime you lose a ton of weight fast, it's going to take it out of your face. And not to mention the fact that some people just lose weight in their face before anything else to begin with.
Right. Right?
It's a thing. It's like you said, if you're going to lose a bunch of weight, you're going to lose some muscle with it. It's going to happen.
But so, where do you see a lot of fat loss with people when they lose weight or gain weight? You see it in their face. You always do. One way or another, that's one of the first places that you see it because you can hide stuff in clothes.
Yeah, no, you get fluffy. You get fluffy face, I call it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can just tell. I can tell in my videos when I'm like, okay, I look way too thin or okay, maybe I had a little too much salt the night before. You know, like, I you can see it in your face. Trust me.
Yeah.
We have to do part two because we have so many other peptides to cover and so many things. So I'll talk to you about that after, but this has been, I don't even feel like I've been on here 10 minutes and I can't believe it's been an hour, 10 minutes.
Can't believe it's been an hour either. This is fun. All right.
So yeah, I mean, well, when we're talking about stuff we're so interested in, it's super fun, you know? Well, tell everybody how they can follow you and then I'll link it all in the description, but I want to make sure everybody knows exactly where to get in your groups, follow you, whatever the case may be.
Thanks, Dylan. So the podcast is Longevity with Natalie Nittam. My website is natnittam.com. It's undergoing a huge overhaul. So for now, if you go there and you go, God, this is kind of meh, it's about to get better. Instagram is @NatalieNittam. And also on my website, you can sign up for a newsletter, which I think it's a pretty cool newsletter. There's also a peptide specific newsletter if you want it. And then the membership community, that information is on the website as well. So natnittam.com is kind of like, even though it's slightly imperfect right now, it's ground zero for all the other stuff.
I'm going to go get your newsletter too. I just like to stay up to date on good info from people. So I'm going to do that. But I would encourage everybody to sign up, follow, and do whatever you can. If you really want to gain like true insight and education, Natalie's one I would highly recommend. So I just want to throw that out there. We will absolutely link everything. We will obviously talk and set up another part two of this. And shit, we maybe need a part three to where we're going, but that's okay. So I really appreciate your time. I know how busy you are and I know that you're in high demand. So thank you for making the time for me and my audience today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for making the time for me. Thank you so much.
All right, everybody. Well, stay tuned for plenty more to come. Dylan Jamelli and Natalie Nittam signing off.